Straight Jack, episode 11.
He says it with such authority, doesn't he?
I know, it's great.
He owns that.
We review three films every fortnight. One new release, one post-2000, and one pre-2000. And the new film was chosen by Ian.
Yes.
Which is the basis for our theme this week of Cliques. Cliques? It's Cliques.
Cliques.
Cliques, yeah. Could who do chose that, the that. Adam Sandler, Kate Beckinsale? Yeah.
Female Cliques. And the new release this week was the much-anticipated new film from Nicholas Winding Refn, The Neon Demon. And this is his third big in-competition Cannes sort of film in a row. And this one, in a kind of similar way, also has a very similar but slightly different sort of stylized visual glow to it. Cliff Martinez returns for a third time on The Sound. And in a nutshell, this film is about the Hollywood sort of fashion industry. It follows Elle Fanning, who is 16 in the film.
Correct.
Yep. 16 in the film. She's just moved in and she's trying to make her way in the scene. She meets two models who appear to be her friends and one makeup artist who sort of guide her through the narrative. And yeah, you can't really say too much, as this is just mad, isn't it? How mad is this, James?
Well, yeah, I don't really know how much to say, because there's always a threat that there's something underlying. There's this sort of eerie atmosphere that you just feel that there's something untoward going on or is going to go on. And I mean, it's a very provocative film, as I think all of his films are, really. And again, for me, it's quite a superficial film in terms of it looks fantastic. But for me, I'm not quite sure how much more it had underneath that. And you talk about Elle Fanning, you know, as her character, you can tell quite early on. There's one scene where they're sort of quizzing her, not quite interrogating her, but they're quizzing her in the bathroom. And then she sort of gives in, or she just gives the answer that you know that they want her to give. And you think at that point, you know she's going to be corrupted. You know she's going to be seduced by what this industry, what the money, what the fame, what it may well bring her. And ultimately, that's the film from there goes and escalates to the point of ultimate jealousy and obviously the fear that what happens if this younger, better-looking, more attractive person is going to replace me as the pinnacle of what I do at the moment.
So is that what we agree that on the face of it is? It is just showing in quite a simple kind of allegory of how this industry can corrupt and how it is so superficial.
I think it is more of a theme than a story at times.
Yeah.
And I think he's done really well to represent that visually.
Yeah.
it's an absolutely stunning film. No matter if the shot is complex or simple, every single piece is a work of art.
Every frame of painting.
Completely. but in the same way, it's a great symbolism for that industry.
Yeah.
Both the film and kind of Hollywood modelling industry are...
Style over substance.
Yes, that's exactly it. Thank you.
You can tell there's some, you know, some rather sort of innovative things behind it in the first half, but still the story itself is quite middle of the road in terms of new girl in town looking like she's going to be more successful than me and therefore I'm going to be very jealous kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then it goes down the road that it threatens to, and maybe similar films like this always threaten to but never dare actually go down. Whereas old
dark.
NWR, as he likes to be fashioned in it throughout his film. Yeah, it's incredibly dark and it's there's a horrible atmosphere throughout it all, really, to the point where towards the ending crescendo where it, you know, absolutely erupts, really.
But almost to the point where it feels like a psychological thriller.
I think if you were going to put a simple genre on this, like a basic tag, I think it would be a psychological thriller.
Right, okay.
Retrospectively, yeah. But
yeah.
I wouldn't have thought that.
No.
It's only at the end that you look back and you think, crikey, actually, I went through some emotional states in there that I didn't think I was going to be going through, having seen the trailer and having assumed what this film was going to be.
And it is an important distinction from, I thought it was going to be more of an out-and-out horror film. I genuinely don't think it was. I think it was more akin, because some of the best psychological thrillers have gore and they have violent scenes, but they're not based on sort of monsters. And because they were introduced as these people, these characters that she was bound to interact when she moved to town and decided to join this industry, it's all from then on pretty psychological. And then the imagery sort of reflects, I think we said it about a film last time, it's just a sensory almost overload in some of these scenes. And you just sit back, let it wash over you and see how it sits, I guess.
From beginning to end, from the title cards,
yeah,
which looked
heavily
3D,
stylized,
absolutely incredible, to her first photo shoot, when her and the photographer step onto the plain white canvas for the first time. Yeah. And it's blinding.
You have to readjust, don't you? You've come from the pitch black.
And then he starts throwing gold paint on her, and it goes up to the next level.
Animalistic.
He's pushing boundaries in absolutely the right direction.
Yeah.
It feels so, it feels groundbreaking. I know that sounds so stupid to say, but I haven't really seen much like this. I've seen stuff that looks great, but the story just doesn't really connect it together.
Yeah.
It just flowed so beautifully.
I think I've seen stuff that tries to, I mean, he's heavily influenced by sort of the 70s, and Suspiria visually is the big one. The internal scenes are shot for shot, or like the colour palette is cut straight out of that, and he's been quite open about that. But these films from, I think one was The Centrefold Girls, a very gritty sort of B-movie from the 70s, but whereas those had a certain grit, he's taken it with this heavily advanced style, picked out all the bits from the image that he doesn't need, and as a result, and slow-mo and the use of music, and he has produced images and ideas that I don't think I've seen only in other Refn films, and he definitely has his own authorial style, for sure.
I feel like he puts a lot of work into it.
Yeah.
I can imagine him sat in grading suites for hours on end saying, I need it to look like exactly like this.
And every word, like not a word is wasted. I'm not saying all of the words necessarily add up to the sum of their parts. They don't always mean an awful lot, but like Drive, there weren't too many words,
no,
particularly from the protagonist. But yeah, here, there's every word he's probably gone, just cut out just anything unnecessary, and there's so much space.
Even if he doesn't work incredibly hard to get that result, it feels like he cares, and it feels like this is his film, which is why I think he does plaster his name all over it. I mean, I saw it at least 6 times in the film. Before it starts, the title cards, at the end, his initials, they're just everywhere.
So it's great. It's the perfect film.
No. Sorry. I completely agree with pretty much everything you guys have said. For me, you know, I'm not necessarily, you know, particularly well versed in film styles and certain traits that directors have. I know people say, oh, that's such a Spielberg shot, or Cronenberg, and you know, David Lynch, for example. People always say, oh yeah, that's a classic, him or her. That's exactly his kind of film, or exactly his kind of shot. And I think I get it with Fincher, and you get it with Tarantino, for example.
Yeah.
But only the ones that are really overt and really obvious. And Refn is exactly that for me. I suppose I can tell it's his type of film.
He's making it for him, isn't
he? Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where it probably lost me, is that he doesn't care what I'm thinking at all. And you admire him for that, but then for me, I can't give him extra marks for that, because I can only react to the way... Yeah. To his film, the way I naturally react to it. And Cliff Martinez, again, his reference use of sound, and the film, his film's use of the soundtrack, that Cliff Martinez, every single time, knocks it out of the park.
He's 3 for 3.
Drive is probably my favourite soundtrack. I mean, that is just beautiful. Everything about it is just perfect. But for me, there's a couple of things. One is just that, because it did go in the non-conventional way, shall we say, I couldn't help but leave the cinema thinking, I really wish I'd seen a conventional version of that. Not necessarily that I would have preferred it, but I would have been really interested to see where the visuals and the theme and the pictorial side to it, I think, was incredibly unique. But the story was as well, and I almost thought, you know, I'd love to have continued with how visually stunning it was, but just have that attributed to a more linear, a more standard and maybe more cliche storyline, to just see what he could have done. Because for me, and we were talking about it earlier, there's a bit towards the end which we're all thinking of, and we've all sort of flirted around, which it goes in a direction that I didn't see coming and I didn't appreciate as much as maybe I could have done. And I thought, maybe if he'd just gone down a normal route, this film would have maybe have been a perfection.
I don't like the term, because I know that people say it about some of our favourite directors, but the term self-indulgence. Mm. Do you feel that it was self-indulgent to the point where he's just sat pleasuring himself? I say that definitely in more ways than one when it comes to this film. He's putting on, because I believe the scene that we just simply, I had no idea it was coming, and as a result, it was more affecting for it.
He couldn't care less what other people think. He makes a film for himself.
He's from that Von Trier and sort of Gaspar Noé train of thought of, we make art house films for our fans, for ourselves. And hey, if we can make a few bucks so we can get to, and get a few actors who want to work with us because of what we do, great. But we're going to make our films for us anyway, I guess. And it does feel like that. But yeah, I mean, that's fine by me.
Mm.
It's wonderful. But I think one of the main things that when I walked out, and actually I did find it quite frustrating, I couldn't stop myself doing it. The last, including this, last three films have been very sort of similar, and obviously with the similar collaborators. When it came to, I'd hear a sound, or I'd go, actually, visually, where's this sit? Only God Forgives, Drive. They're all on level, and they're all, I had bar charts in my head going, where does this pan out? And I was like, visually, it's definitely the best. Sound, Drive probably still takes it. For shock value, Only God Forgives, perhaps. For developed characters, it's definitely the worst.
But I think they're quite easy to compare, though. They're obviously very different stories, but you just know that they're very obviously his films. And I think, therefore, it is quite easy to reference and to use them as reference points. And for me, Drive is still comfortably the best. And Only God Forgives is... It's not as bad. For me, Only God Forgives isn't as bad as some people were saying it was.
Yeah.
That it was this atrocity. But for me, it wasn't particularly good. And this, I think, sits somewhere in the middle.
I'm trying to... Because I do want to talk about the issues. Did you like or dislike the initial sort of love interest, the guy who sort of like was the early photographer, and he sort of pops in, they have like a couple of scenes, and then within 2 seconds she's gone through a character development, and
it's a red herring for me. And there are a lot of them, because you talk about that scene where they first go to the club, for example, and she goes there and the music's blaring and they're meeting each other, and she looks over and there's a guy looking at her. Never see that guy again.
Is it intentional? Or is it that he's almost got caught up in this whirlwind he's created and goes, oh, I'm not even going to bother with that. That's just going to make the film longer and people don't need to see that. Or
I don't know,
Because there are so many bits about this film that I know I liked, I know I disliked, but there are also so many bits that still now, nearly 2 weeks later, I still can't decide what they mean.
You don't know what was left on the editing floor as well. You know, it could well be that there was a real...
Developed sort of plot with
exactly,
that.
Exactly, where that they go somewhere concrete, whereas actually maybe it's purely there to build intrigue or to, you know, this false sense of security that actually what you think is going to happen, that's going to happen, whereas actually no, we're going down a completely different road here and everything you thought was going to happen, I've just tricked you into thinking that.
I like to think that things are relevant when they are relevant in the film. So that person noticing her in the club is a bit like, you know, oh, guys are noticing me.
She's arrived.
I mean, she's 16. She doesn't. That's probably the first time she stepped in. The boyfriend disappears as soon as he disappears out of her mind, out of her mentality.
Yeah.
She doesn't give him a second thought.
And we, yeah.
That's an interesting point, actually, because one of my big gripes for this film was how unsubtle her seduction was in terms of how much she wanted, or how much she suddenly became apparent that she was beautiful and that people noticed her and people wanted her. And what you've just described there perhaps is that it's not as black and white as that and as pivotal and as overnight as that. Maybe that boy coming out of the story was her, because there is, again, there's that scene where they're sitting and eating dinner and he wants to go and she's like,
yeah,
I'm comfortable here, you know.
Is it her shedding her innocence?
That's almost a perfect phrase for it, actually.
Just sort of like, because that relationship, even though it is still, because you know her real age, still something in your head makes you feel a little bit off. But then you realise, oh, he's a real, genuine, a good guy compared to all of the monsters that surround her life and her new career. But yeah, perhaps it's just that was, like you say, the turning point, and just when that part of her life is gone, now we're just going to go on in a different way.
You know, I think it's a film that may well grow on me in the future, but for now, and coming out of the cinema, it didn't quite sit well with me. I didn't know how to react. Robbie and I went to go see it together, and I came out certainly not feeling comfortable at all at judging it there and then, because it's just one of those things that you've just got to let it sit with you. For me, it's a 3 stars, because I think I'm still probably in that ambiguous mindset of not quite deciding. But I've said I really like some parts, I've said I've really disliked some parts, but for me, it's a film that you have to see. Even if you hate it, you still have to experience this kind of film, because there are things in there that you don't get to see in other films. And it's only those directors like Nicholas Winding Refn who are prepared to go that extra step that all of a sudden you
push
see
and
things
push
that
and push.
you wouldn't see. I've said that I would like to have seen a conventional version of this, but if I had done, I wouldn't have seen some of the amazing things that I did get to see in this film. So even if you don't think you'll like it, go and see it and you will be wowed by parts, whether that's happily or disgustingly. You'll be wowed by parts.
It's almost mainstream art house. Let's spend loads of money on a big art house film and try and make it as accessible as possible by actually having a storyline.
Yeah, and having these big actors, and people want to see models on being models.
Speaking of which, the casting was superb. Jenna Malone, and even, I mean, although Elle Fanning didn't have to really portray a lot of emotion, she was perfect for the role.
Yeah.
The doe-eyed model, the innocent.
Yeah. And models as models is inspired.
Yes. Yeah.
Who would have thought it?
Who would have thunk it? I think it'd be better if I gave my opinion next, just because I think Robbie's going to come out with an interesting one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's very gutsy, beguiling, and it is pure, evocative, stylish cinema. But for the reason and the point that James led with from the very start of the discussion, as much as the images and there were things I went to places I've never seen and didn't think it would go to, the character development was distinctly lacking. And unfortunately, as I was saying throughout the whole thing, I couldn't help but compare it to Only God Forgives and Drive. And even though in my heart of hearts, I know that Drive is the better film, Only God Forgives still remains my favourite of the three. As much as this was by far its most beautiful visually, I was left a little bit, I was definitely in and I was down for it, but I was left just a little bit outside the door. So I'd have to give it 4 stars, because the other two are 5-star perfect films for me, and this is just missing an extra edge within the characters, I think.
You're going to surprise me here, I think.
I think so.
I think he's absolutely spoiled us. I think he's created a work of art. There's a great quote during the film where I think her sort of manager, photographer?
Yeah.
Describes her as a diamond in a sea of glass, and I think that's perfect for this film. There is so much tosh out there, X-Men included in that, and this is so brilliant. I encourage everyone to watch it. Like James says, even if it's not your cup of tea, it's a five out of five.
Fantastic. So on to the next selection, which was chosen by James.
Correct. Which was following on from on the theme of female cliques, was Girlhood, inspired from what the director saw, sort of travelling around suburban Paris and some of the gangs of girls, sort of around the suburbs of Paris, and basically depicts the adolescence, I suppose, of Mariem, who's the main protagonist in this, but primarily. Her and the group of friends that she becomes involved with as she explores her, well, I suppose, as she explores her girlhood in a way. I mean, for me, it starts with this terrific American football scene.
Go on.
I love that scene, because not only the scene itself and the music that's attached to it, but it just sets up this perfect walk back to where they live. Where basically they're all talking, they're all having fun. All of a sudden, they sort of walk into the projects essentially, and then there's some guys hanging around. Clearly, some tough guys. And all of a sudden, these girls who are having a great bit of fun, laughing with each other, go deadly quiet, and they just slowly walk back. And then gradually, each one of them peels off as they go back to their houses and they go back to where they live. To the point where then you're just left with obviously the main protagonist. It's such a great. There's exposition in there. There's a little bit of comedy. There's just. Everything in that scene, including the American football scene, just sets the perfect platform, the perfect foundation for this film to then go on to. And for me, it was just such a great look at sort of that collective group being intimidated.
Before I've just got to just say 110, just because me and Robbie had a little discussion in the week, and I just wanted to say it, but just not only did I love the song and have listened to it over 1,000 times since, it was just these girls... these adolescent girls preparing for battle.
Yeah.
They're getting ready. You see them getting armoured up and they go in this very, and they're going for it. And it's like, that was the main thing about this film that I think the director was slated for, actually.
Yeah.
As well as credited as saying, was it necessary? Her mission statement was, I'm going to put the four central characters and the main cast are all going to be black females because there aren't enough. There simply aren't enough. And that is absolutely true. But within this American football scene, straight away, you're in.
Yeah, because I think for me there, that point there, and then there's also, it must be, the opening 5 minutes, maybe the opening 10,
yeah,
it does such a great job of very quickly contextualizing everything that, that she is going through, that our main protagonist is going through, because then she goes back into the house and she, it's about her relationship with her sisters, the sort of oppressive brother that she has there living with them, a working mum who's not really around all that much, and how she's struggling with school. And you literally get that in the first 5-10 minutes, and all of a sudden you're like, I know this girl.
I know her.
Yeah.
Better than I know Elle Fanning in the whole movie. I know they're going for different things, but
I'm on side. I'm onto this. And then all of that context, again, first 5-10 minutes leads her to get involved in this clique, leads her to wanting to get involved in this clique and becoming popular, and the benefits that she perceives will come along with that. And you're just set then. The film can then just take you on the journey that it eventually does.
Which is, for me, I've got here my comparison. This is Boyhood meets A Prophet.
When I first watched it, I didn't think too much of it. And then I thought about the comparisons to Boyhood, and I thought Boyhood was exactly that. It was his boyhood. It was his childhood. And as a boy, how he was growing up in the first 16 years of his life. This,
we get that in the first 10 minutes. Yeah. We've got the previous 5 years.
Whereas in this, it's her girlhood in the same way. But all you do, you see it adolescence. So for me, girlhood isn't about Mariem's childhood and how she's grown up as a girl. It's the girlhood in terms of like brotherhood, that she
togetherness
gets, the togetherness, the
camaraderie,
the camaraderie. Perfect. I mean, for me, there are themes here throughout this film of conformity, peer pressure, you know, friendship. Ultimately, there's a bit of romance in there as well. Corruption, again, like we're probably going to say in all these three films, in terms of this seduction of power, or the seduction of popularity that makes you do some things that maybe in hindsight you probably wouldn't do. And Mariem, for example, when she sees her younger sister doing it later on in the film, she quickly tries to protect her from, which is a nice little twist. And then also just transformation as well. When you first see her, she's quite tomboyish. She's not naturally, I suppose, what you would consider to be good looking. And then all of a sudden, they take her braids out, they straighten her hair, they put her makeup on, and all of a sudden, hold on, who's this?
Ten things I hate about you. Yeah, I'd say the A Prophet thing, just in the way that everything that you've said, but it's just how this ruthless kind of, you're on the outside, you're at the very bottom, and without even necessarily wanting it initially, you're forced into this pyramid, this paradigm, and she's just got into it and has worked her way up to being this monster at the top, in a way.
It's about a girl who has to grow up too quickly.
Yeah.
She has no real choice, and she tries to explore the film makes a good effort to display the different options she could have and the choices available to her. And unfortunately, they are very, very limited. It does very well at exploring those themes. However,
I was going to say that was lip service.
There's been too much liking on this film. Yeah. What are we gunning for, Robbie?
No, there's nothing I'm particularly gunning for.
All right.
And this,
cool.
this is most probably a personal thing, and something which I can't really get my head around is just what it was really trying to say. Like, there were so many themes, and it was trying to touch on everything. And I still didn't gain anything by the end of the film. I didn't know what to think.
It's trying to gain. Sorry, it's just trying to show you this journey. You didn't go on the journey.
I went on the journey, but I still felt like there was no end to the journey.
But I think, and we don't want to get into too much detail here, but I think it does almost come full cycle. There is a cyclical nature to it, because then you get to the end of the film, and you've seen the experiences that we're not really quite sure of time, we're not even really quite sure of her age, but you get to the end of the film, and she's in this, I hesitate to say this, but in this state of arrested development, because she comes back round to the end of the film, and all of a sudden, she hasn't really gained anything. She hasn't matured as much as you thought she would have done.
What did you feel like you had gained as a viewer?
But I'm not sure it's necessarily about gaining it for me. If we're reducing it to what I've personally gained, I would say it's an insight into the struggles that people like that, who I don't have too much experience of, what they have to go through. And also, as a 26-year-old guy who's gone through a male period of adolescence, I think it's quite interesting to understand what she goes through, how she gave into peer pressure, how she conformed to what she thought was what she should do. I think she sort of idealises these characters that as she's never really seen as a geek, but as someone who's not in the cool crowd, inevitably with the people not in the cool crowd, they are always looking, or they are always assuming that the cool crowd are the benchmark at which everyone should always try and attain, and they should always try and achieve that level of popularity. And she sees an opportunity to become that, and takes it on, and unsurprisingly, as an immature, young, inexperienced individual, she perhaps takes it a bit too far, and she gets too caught up in it to the point where she's doing some things that she would have never dreamed that she should or would have been doing. And all of a sudden, you know, she comes full cycle and realises that maybe that's not the life for her, but is the previous life accessible to her anymore? And is life that easy? I think maybe that's one of the nice things about the ending, is that it's not like, oh, it's all happy in the end, and obviously everything's fine, she's always got something to fall back on. It's crikey, you know, actually, you make a lot of decisions in your life. Some of them you'll make correctly, some of them you won't. Some of them will have consequences, some of them won't. And more importantly, life isn't this straight line. There are so many ambiguities to what may happen.
It's so open-ended.
It's so open-ended.
Perfect, the final scene is very poetic for me, and I think it's much stronger, and it's similar in a way to the Boyhood ending. It's like, and we've just shown you this segment of the piece of string, which is this person's life. We're just going to show you this, and what happens next, based on what you've seen, is completely up to you. So, and have we talked about the Rihanna scene yet?
Can we talk about it, please?
Oh, no,
I just, because I know you're going to have maybe some more comments of negativity, so I'm thinking
it's
do them
scene.
First.
It's a beautiful scene.
It's a fantastic scene.
But I mean, I didn't get more. I didn't get anything from it. I got the whole story. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the film as a story. I just didn't get the message. I didn't get what it was trying to tell me.
For me, and maybe it's open for interpretation, but for me, it was the best it was ever going to get. It was the pinnacle. And maybe that's the plot in a film where, you know, it's, well, I was going to say it's always darkest before the dawn, but it's the opposite of that. You know, it's the calm before the storm. It's this fantastic, you know, eruption of excitement and fun that they are having together. And they have been together for a perfect amount of time. They're having a great bit of fun in the hotel. They're enjoying life, and it's the best they're going to be. And she's having such a great time. And from then on, all of a sudden, they don't start to unravel, because it never gets as serious as that. But you know what? The clique that this theme is all about, it starts to break up a little bit. Things do start to go a little bit wrong. And some of the holes, you know, in friendships and in, you know, friendship groups when you're 16 years old do start to crack. And you suddenly realise that the glorious moment that we all remember from the scene, which is that scene, is one that is only in memory, and it doesn't happen all the time. And then it's bookended with, later on in the film, another scene like that, where yes, they come together, but it's not the same, and it's not like it used to be.
It just, I'm emotional thinking about it,
because
that was scene. That I don't know about yourself, but Otway Park, Wootton Bassett, 15, flagging a strongbow, your best mates rolling around in pushing each other into ditches. It's that and it was just so warming and very moving.
So for me, this is the biggest compliment I can pay this film, is that what's going on screen isn't particularly interesting. It's just real. It's not constructed. It's just authentic, and that's what makes it so captivating. That's why I got on board, and for me, that's why it's 4 stars. It's not quite 5 for me. That Rihanna scene is fantastic, and just like I think Marianne will probably always remember that scene from this film, that's a scene I will always remember as well. And for me, this is close to a 5, but it's a very strong 4 for me.
I thought the camaraderie in the girlhood, as you earlier defined, James, came across really well, and it did help me to understand, you know, that sort of generation and that background. But I just couldn't get on with it. I just didn't get it. And I enjoyed the journey, I did, but I always think, when I first leave a film, how do I feel about it? And when I turned off my TV after watching it, I was just left wanting more, and I can't say what that was. 3 stars.
Oh, okay.
It was I was very moved and thoroughly enjoyed it when I first watched it. And I was that's a good 4-star film. And then by the end of the year, was in my top 5 of the year, and bit of time on, it's still there. And yeah, it's 5 stars for me. Yeah, for me, it's one of the very best films of the last few years, so 5 stars.
Heathers, 1988. I'm going on your word saying it's 98.
88.
Is that what you've got there?
Michael Lehman.
Heathers is about the lead character, played by Winona Ryder.
Winona.
She plays Veronica, who begins life as a member of the most powerful clique in the school. They are
Heather and, oh goodness, the third.
It's Heather, right?
3 Heathers.
It's three Heathers.
Hence the name of the film, Heathers.
Because they're Heathers. It's like the Spinellis. It's almost like they got
it. It finally cleeks into place.
Oh, nice one. Now it's cleeked in place.
They are, yeah, feared and hated, yet popular. Which always seems to be the way with this kind of film. Mm-hmm.
Always.
Which, as an adult, you kind of makes you wonder, why would... You can't, don't give popularity
but you remember,
to hated
you
people.
Remember that school, but you, though,
I remember
you
it
remember
so well.
That school, yeah.
But it's just, it's silly. It sounds so bizarre. If everyone hates four people, why do we idolise them? Anyway, so Veronica meets JD, played by Christian Slater, the school bad boy who initiates a plan to kind of disrupt this hierarchy amongst the school children. And nice. Thus the film continues. The plot develops. And Ian has thoughts on said film.
Are we going to go into it a bit? And I think you can certainly say there are a number of deaths.
Yeah.
I don't think we will go into them and discuss them. And by the end, you're left with something completely mad and not where you thought it was going. Certainly if you watched it in 1988. And at the same time, battling, obviously, John Hughes has this very, he created this very bubblegum, but very popular, very likeable style of teen movie that... still remembered now.
And the opening 15 minutes are exactly the same as all of those films.
Oh, exactly.
Including
that.
Modern day Mean Girls and 10 Things I Hate About You.
In a way, yeah. So you do get that. You're basically introduced to all the groups and you get this understanding of who's the popular kids and who people think about them. But the one thing, one of the things I liked about this film was that you don't see the betrayal to the dark side. So Veronica is already in the Heather's group, whereas in other films like Mean Girls, she would be the innocent, quiet one. Then she goes into the Heather's group and then it's about, oh, I found myself again and actually, you know what, I'm actually really nice. This, you don't have any of that preamble. She's already in the group of Heather. She's always already the popular one. She's already the revered one that people sort of hate but love. But the good thing is you immediately know she's got a conscience and
yeah,
she realises
She's quite obviously a black sheep within that group.
And that's what I like, because this is a much more mature version of things like Mean Girls, whereas this, you know, it's an 18 and it deserves to be an 18, but that... It's because it treats its audience with maturity.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also, which I didn't realise at the time, until I just didn't put the two together, but it also predates Twin Peaks. I think that's a very important comparison because visually, that sort of very OTT kind of unapologetic 80s sheen, which is from the lighting, costume and set design, does create a very dreamlike quality where some scenes, even when you're seeing these incidents... You're going, is that, but is it, oh, it's all a dream, right? No, the whole thing, in the same way that Lynch obviously would probably take it to another level, but the template's all here.
I read on the internet that the writer wanted Stanley Kubrick to direct it as first choice.
That was correct. He tried and failed several times to get it to him.
But he wanted it
to be a three-hour film.
I mean,
you can only dream of
considering Kubrick...
A teen comedy!
He touched every other genre, didn't he?
A teen comedy would have been one of the great lost films that never was. But, yeah, I mean, you watch Mean Girls and it's all here. Everything is here, absolutely everything. I think everything since this is incredibly, whether they know it or not, is incredibly indebted to this. This was the first time for a long time, and especially, yeah, all the John Hughes films, they're all lovely, don't get me wrong. They're all very light, but this is just, it's just the word is subversive, and it was just way more gutsy and ballsy than anything else since.
I'm not really sure, and I should have written down the years of release for these films, but for me it reminded me of True Romance, Badlands, Sightseers is certainly more recent, but certainly Badlands
it's
and True Romance is
it's
around
certainly
that time.
Before True
before
Romance,
True Romance.
That's
Badlands,
92
is around.
Badlands is 70s
so that's Malick, isn't it?
Yeah
it reminds
what,
me
are you thinking of Badlands?
Yeah, that is Malick, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Malick's first film.
Martin Sheen and
Sissy
yeah, I don't want to go into why it reminded me of that a little bit, just in terms of
the initial naivety and the
what they go on to do, kind of thing. So not necessarily from a thematic point of view, but more from a
right,
and not necessarily from a plot point of view, but more in terms of what the two main characters end up getting up to and the influence that one has over the
dynamic.
Other. Yeah, the dynamic. Perfect. Yeah, and for me, it reminded me of those three films, but didn't get anywhere near them. And for me, I mean, True Romance and Badlands are fantastic films. Sightseers is a really, really good modern day film. So for me, maybe it's a bit harsh trying to measure it up against those three films, which, you know, are quite well revered, particularly in my eyes anyway. But there are some really good moments in this. There are some really good snappy dialogue. I mean, right from the get-go, there's genuine, rude, authentic dialogue, which you don't see in the types of Mean Girls. In Mean Girls, it's quite glossy, whereas in this, it's like, okay, that is exactly how people speak to each other. Kind of, yes, maybe a little bit over the top sometimes, but they're pretty brutal at times, which is quite refreshing to see. There's a couple of quotes I wrote down. You know, my best friend, and someone responds like, "Do you mean worst enemy?" She says, "Well, no, same difference." And that is exactly that idea that you said earlier about they're loved and hated, and no one really knows why.
There are plenty of those in this. There are so many lines. I can't remember it verbatim, of Christian Slater when he's on the stairwell quite near the end. I think actually it's a spoiler, so we won't go into it, but there are some real, like, they've obviously written these lines and gone, let's work these in.
Yeah.
But they're really poignant stuff.
He says one, it's towards the beginning, he says, you know, I've been to 7 schools in 7 states and the only thing that's changed is my locker code. And you think, it's just like, what a great...
it's top notch.
It's such a good, you know, it epitomises.
I genuinely paused it. Yeah. I was trying to work it out. What do you mean by that? Yeah. But also just because... you have to take it in, don't you? That's really clever.
It's so profound and poignant, considering, you know, it's supposed to be a little... And that's what I mean when it says it treats people with maturity, because a 14-year-old person who is going through what they're going through isn't going to be going, oh, that is tough. I mean, you're speaking to me. You know, only we who have gone through everything that they've gone through can look back retrospectively and go, that is spot on. And maybe I didn't quite get the vibe of this, but I think it was trying to be funny. At times, and for me, there was one funny
trying?
Bit to do with yeah, wait, to do you, with mineral water.
What do you mean by trying?
For me, it wasn't funny at all.
There were no laughs.
Other than that mineral water bit, which is fantastic.
Mineral one. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
That made me laugh. Because
start to finish,
because it goes quite dark.
Yeah.
And again, a couple of warning signs there, which I won't go into, but that makes me think. You know, why is she not scared by some of the things he says and does earlier on. For me, I don't quite get how, you know, infatuated she was with him.
I think just to try and sort of, I'll try and bat all of these back. I think that all just comes down to the sort of surreal quality of it, because it's, she should be behaving in a certain way, but she's not. And that's just how this film escalates and progresses.
Smitten you are when you're that age.
Well, yeah, but they're smitten, and then there's someone doing some heinous acts.
But is that surreal? All... It's surreal that she's...
But the film's surreal, or because you can't take it away that she's still a character. She's clearly quite well brought up, and she clearly must have some relatively good morals. So I think...
But it's not...
Why is she not seeing the warning signs?
I think she is. I think she's sort of...
But she's just happy to go along with it.
She's just happy to sort of... She's on the edge. She's got this teenage smitten, and she's got this, oh my goodness, I've been brought up this way, that's horrifically bad. But the whole thing is a joke, like the parents, the fact that the dad's smoking at the every time, how are you feeling, how, like, obviously disinterested, just obviously a play on parents don't really care, blah blah blah, society at the time. None of it should be taken for face value, and none of it should be taken seriously for even a second, because you'd be like, you can't, you've got to go and tell a parent immediately. He's a bad guy.
Not in a scary movie, not another teen movie parody way. It's definite satire, pastiche, nod to
it's
all
a,
these.
It's a little bit
to
before
16 Candles.
The sort of scream and
yeah, but it's not taking the piss out of them.
No,
it's a nod of the hat.
Yeah,
I've misinterpreted this film. Then I think I've thought about this film, and maybe I've fallen into the trap of...
It's the opposite to Girlhood. It's the complete polar opposite for me.
Because when we're talking about female cliques, I suppose when watching all three of these films, I've fallen into the trap of having that as my expectation. And maybe I've gone too far down the line with that and misinterpreted this as... I never thought it was wholly serious, but I got that they were trying to be funny, but for me, it didn't hit any comedic notes that I almost detached from that. And I got far more out of some much more immature, conventional female clique films. Like, I'm not saying I got more out of Mean Girls, but maybe I understood and responded more to Mean Girls and maybe took more of a message and a theme out of Mean Girls.
Is that because of its time? Because Mean Girls was when we were at school and we all watched it. When we were,
and
14.
I was then. This maybe I think almost I'm confused about this film rather than the film
again,
confusing
there
me.
Was the, it was only on this, I think this was only my second viewing, but certainly not for a long time. Mean Girls is I mean, someone should file a law, like a copyright claim. I mean, Mean Girls is, don't get me wrong, one of the teen films of all time. But yeah, it just simply wouldn't have, it simply would not have existed in any shape or form. It is all here. This is the blueprint. Yeah, we'll watch it together sometime. Are you enjoying it now, guys? Look how much fun we're having.
Maybe it needs an audience at the Prince Charles Cinema and everyone laughing. Yeah, it's like Anchorman, you know. Was speaking to a colleague the other day who's never going to listen to this, who was saying, didn't find Anchorman funny at all. Watched it on second viewing with a few mates and just couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah. Different film, yeah.
Different.
Yeah, I mean, I struggled to think of any other qualities that we haven't really sort of mentioned, but yeah, just when you think about how good Twin Peaks was, and you think about that sort of effect and that sort of 80s sheen, and it's so unapologetic, and it does try and do a thing, and it just looks wonderful, and I've literally chatting rubbish because I've got nothing but high praises for it.
For me, because of everything I've said, I think I still have to stick to a 2 stars. And maybe that needs a bit of an asterisk by it, because of maybe I need to rewatch and reinterpret what I looked to get out of this movie. But for me, as things stand, it's 2 stars.
3 stars for me. It does a good job of tipping its hat to that genre of film.
To the teen comedy.
It's more narrow than that. There are so many of these films out there with the high school cliques, with even like your Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, Mean Girls, they're all there. It's something that's done so often. It's like your buddy cops.
But it just does it differently.
It does it very differently. Yeah. Very, very differently. And it does that very, very does that very well. But it deserves recognition for that. But I still didn't think what it did do is worthy of more than 3.
Yeah, I just think you've got Days of Confused, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, probably not quite in the same, but for what it did, Mean Girls,
and
Superbad for this teen high school comedy. But then you've also got Heathers in the big 5. It's absolutely 5 stars. In and amongst those, I'd say this is, with those top 3, excluding Mean Girls, just the 4 best, most that I've just certainly enjoyed the most and have done something maybe a little bit differently between them. But yeah, just could not get enough of them. Was in hysterics from start to finish, which I think was the intention. And yeah, you watch a film like a really great film from only a few years ago called Stoker. Again, this is Stoker. It's that, yeah, it's all there. The woods. Rewatch the woods scene. Carbon copy. But yeah, it's just so influential and just found it fantastic. So
yeah, didn't even think about that.
5 stars from me. And next week's new release has been selected by...
It's my choice. I've gone for the kid-friendly Finding Dory. Arms in the air.
Dory!
Which leads us to the theme of maritime. / nautical.
/ water.
The sea. Which takes us to the post-2000 film, which is Ian.
Post-2000, it only technically came out last year, I think, but I'm going to go for a French film from Lucille Halasunovich-Kosich. Going to get told off for that. Lucille, so-and-so.
Who's going to tell you off for that? I'm curious.
We've got, Cyril, yeah.
We've got listeners. A French film from last year called Evolution.
And the classic, the vintage, pre-2000, is the box office bomb, Waterworld.
Ooh. I've heard that. Is that Kevin Costner in that one?
95, correct.
Oh, 1995, yeah. Fantastic.
Some say it's the sequel to Westworld, but unconfirmed reports.
Yeah, whistleblower.